few of my clients at the moment were having this conversation. So if you're listening, listen to Sean. Sean knows what he's doing. And this is where we want to get you guys to. They're sitting there going, it's just, you know, it's just furniture or it's just whatever. It's just the product. That's all it is. And it's like, not to your customers, it's not. To your customers, it's so much more than that.
Welcome to the Winning with Shopify podcast. This is the podcast to help you scale your Shopify store into a money-making machine. This episode is brought to you by OmniSend, trusted by more than 80,000 Shopify brands just like yours. Everything you need to scale your email marketing and ROI. Send emails, newsletters, and SMS. Build your email list with landing pages and pop-ups. One-click Shopify integration. Get 24/7 email and live chat support all with OmniSend. Now, over to your host, Nick Truman.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Winning with Shopify podcast. If anyone that's not tuned in before, it's a pleasure to have you tuning in today. It absolutely touches my heart to see that you've clicked on the brightest, pinkest icon you've ever seen in your life on Apple iTunes. But it's great to have you tuning in. I hope you find today useful. If you find today kind of useful and not super useful, there might be other episodes for you as well. Check out our entire archive. We've been going for 5 or 6 years now, and what a ride it's been. We've had a complete mix of me doing episodes, the odd rant from me, but mostly the same as today. We've got a guest on. We're going to talk to them and ask them lots of questions. About a whole universe of things, about how they built their businesses or how they support Shopify stores growing. If you haven't already, go to winningwithshopify.com, sign up to our newsletter, and we'll make sure that you never miss an episode because you'll get an email from us every week. And also, we're launching some cool stuff soon as well. When I say cool stuff, I'm not allowed to tell you what it is, but we are going to be asking for your help in the next few weeks. So stay tuned for that because there's an opportunity to come and chat to me, chat to the team, and get involved in something so much bigger than just click and play on a podcast each week. Anyway, into today's episode. So I'm super excited to have an amazing guest with me. His name's Sean. He's the founder of Shock Surplus. And we're going to be talking to Sean about email and a whole range of other things and how he built an 8-figure business as well. So Sean, without further ado, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Nick.
Well, it's a pleasure to have you on. And for anyone that has tuned in before, you're going to know what my first question is going to be because I ask this every week to every single guest. Sean, tell us a bit about your background, about what your business does and how you got into running it in the first place.
Oh man. So like people hear Shock Surplus and automotive, you know, we sell automotive shock absorbers, extremely niche. We've been hyper niche focused way before all this niche talk that's happening in e-commerce the past like half decade. But I got started way back when in like 07 with my stepdad, who's a total gearhead, old school guy, old school engineer, super smart guy, but you know, just like most, I dare say the B word boomers, they just didn't have any tech knowledge whatsoever. So I started working with him and we started doing eBay and Amazon way back when, drop shipping in 2007, 2008, before like a lot of people even knew what that was. So that really got my start in, you know, all things e-commerce, the automotive business. And I got started with Shock Surplus because it's a highly technical product. You know, you just see these tubes under the car and you're like, you know, all these different colors of different brands, like what do they do? It's a highly technical, it's a black box of information. So I saw that and I saw, well, there's a lot of gatekeeping happening. No one knows what all these products do. They all talk and are advertised and marketed the same with the same language. And so I really got started out of a need to educate, you know, just the market as a whole. I found little niches of consumers and drivers that needed help specifically. We can get into that later, but I started from a perspective of like, no one's helping and educating at all. And the whole industry is just leaving it up to the brands to kind of give out information and educate. And they just weren't doing that. So yeah, going on 11 years now for Shock Surplus. There's a little bit more before that in the automotive space. I built a brand and had to sell it, you know, in the first recession in 08, 09. So that was tough, but that has also put me on, you know, I think the right path to navigate the existing economy of challenges that a lot of people are seeing now.
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember during the first, I'm a little bit older than I look. I remember during the first, the first recession of my life, which was 2008, when I was old enough to be working and actually doing something. I remember back then there was a real feeling, certainly in the UK, that towards the end of that recession, it was only the strong businesses that were going to survive. And I remember the UK economy had this massive kind of boom afterwards. And actually, that's where I left a business I was working for that we survived the kind of crash, and we were almost kind of formed within it, really. I think we were quite new at that time. But certainly, I started my first business in that sort of boom where loads of the kind of SEO, PPC, really early day cowboys had all kind of disappeared, which was really nice. So a lot of people, when they were talking to me, had loads of stories where they'd been burned. And we were like, look, we're free for the first month. And we don't do that anymore, unfortunately, everybody. But we just got cracking. You know, we just got cracking and started showing people a difference. We know what we're doing. And also, like, they might have lost 20 or 30% of their competitors as well. So suddenly when, like, you know, credit was, because it was a credit crunch, we called it. As soon as credit was available, it's amazing to kind of see that evolution. But I mean, as you say, like, sad to have to let it go, but I'm sure you learned some valuable lessons you've kind of taken into sort of post 2008 and where you are today.
Yep. Yeah. As we were building the business through, you know, the mid teens, I was really telling my team, I'm like, we're in a really big boom, and it's fairly easy right now to build this business. Not, I don't want to say like that, but, you know, we really didn't start scaling until 2019-ish. And then, you know, our first really big year on Shopify was 2018, 2019. And then 2020 happened, right? And you never, you know, when all the COVID stuff was going down, I was like, this is it. This is the apocalypse.
Yeah.
you think everything is going to collapse, but our business, we exploded like a rocket ship, and nothing prepares you for that.
Yeah, but good problems to have compared to trying to scale stuff down or let staff go or whatever. It's, yeah, you'd much rather have like too much demand than not enough. I always say, yep. Maybe that's the sales guy in me just bursting to get out. What I love, two things that you just explained that I think are really fascinating, actually. One is you've highlighted the problem. So when you started this business, there was a problem that people didn't understand what it was. And I love the way you've used kind of black box. It was sort of like everything's kind of in there and everyone's expecting the manufacturers to educate everyone. So let's talk about that first then. So how did you guys then have to kind of build your web copy and literally build web pages and provide information to customers? Like, what format did that actually appear in? How did it work? And if, I guess the bigger question is, was that the approach you took, or did you do something slightly different to kind of get going and get the first wave of customers in?
You know, the first customers that I really went after were like the highly modified, you know, they're people with highly modified vehicles, and they were always just looking for replacement parts, replacement shocks for their lifted trucks. There's a certain stigma about that audience in the United States, lifted trucks, big wheels, all that kind of stuff, show vehicles. But, you know, they had a lot of money and they were just looking for an easy way to make something, you know, make a purchase. And it was hard because they're searching through catalogs, trying to find part numbers here and there. And I just made it kind of a single bundle. Bundling back then was just like not a thing at all. And so I kind of discovered that. Bundling also, not only did it make it easy for them to purchase, but I was also able to give a little bit of a discount on you know, bundled items versus the full retail price of them. And so it was kind of twofold advantage in that space. So that was like early 2012, 13, 14. And then as I got further and further into everything, it became really apparent how lack of education the market in general had. And so from that point on, it was a lot of using the parts myself, using the parts on our own staff vehicles or in our friend network, and really understanding the products. Not only are, you know, we don't manufacture ourselves, but we were using many different brands. So we're a retailer that just sells everyone else's stuff. And so we go as deep as possible on a certain type of product, and then, you know, build the copy, build the images, build secondary images on Shopify around like what we understand, and kind of visualizing those things for the customer. Visualizations in our space are extremely important, because there's a lot of, when we describe something in our industry, there's a lot of maybe new words people just don't understand. And so, like, not only you have to dumb down the language, but you have to like provide visuals to like the behaviors of the product as well. So discovering that early on really gave us a big advantage, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. See, we're going to come on to in a minute, not just yet. I want to ask one more question first, but we're going to come on to understanding who that customer is, because I think it's fascinating the way that you've almost given me like the two first initial stages. One of, there's just these guys browsing catalogs and probably Googling like a part number, you know, 12345 ABC. I need that part. And you just almost need to tick the box like, yes, we've got it. I want to talk about how that journey's unfolded in a second. But I think that the bundling thing's fascinating. And the reason it's fascinating to me is, as somebody who works in PPC and SEO, we want to show the most revenue we can. And obviously the quickest thing for me to do is tell a client to make a small change on the website and revenue like doubles. And I haven't done any SEO work or any PPC work, and nor have my team. And that's great. So if we're doing our work and the client is improving conversion value, average order value, et cetera. But with the bundling, like, I feel like these days it's such an obvious thing, isn't it? It's like this table lamp costs, I don't know, £50. But if you add in a specialized lampshade on top of the upgraded lampshade, that's £70. If you want a bulb, the bulb's only a fiver, but that's now like £75, £85. So you're starting to build this kind of bundle of things. And then it arrives and they just kind of put the whole lot together and go, wow, I've got a table lamp, a nice bulb in the top. Oh, and I bought a matching one. So I've just doubled the whole lot. And I've got one each side of the sofa based on the picture I saw. It all seems so obvious. Like, just to run down memory lane for a second, even on Shopify, where we've got all these lovely apps now, just so everyone can feel like they're living in the best age possible for Shopify. What was it like trying to set that up on your old Shopify store way back when, in, you know, 2008, 2009, like, you know, in the early days?
It was on BigCommerce, and it was really just a single listing that you just put everything in and they describe what was in the listing in the description. So it was very, very dumbed down. Yeah, it's not like it is now, or, you know, in the new Shopify winter editions, they're talking about like inherent bundling, way more variations, a lot, you know, they're really stepping up their game in that regard. So hopefully I can trim one or two apps on our end when we kind of figure that out. But yeah, the bundling thing, it has become a lot more of a buzz term in the past few years. The whole profitability shift, AOV shift, true revenue shift. All these things kind of start highlighting which direction you should take your store now.
Yeah. And I think as brands grow as well, I'm sure you guys came up against this with bundling. We've had clients before that have done that, where they've just kind of like made their own image. It's one product, one SKU, but you need to now tell the warehouse that when SKU 1, 2, 3, 4 comes in, that's 7 products. They all need to go in the same box, the same customer. It's one order. And if you don't tell the warehouse that, suddenly they're like, we don't know what that is. Like, you know, refund order. And you're like, that's my biggest order. It's a whole bundle of stuff and you've just refunded it or rejected it, or it's taken 2 days to ask, you know, someone's asked someone who's gone, oh, I know what that is. Someone in marketing told me at the coffee machine what that item is. Which is a genuine thing one of our guests said about a year ago. So I think being able to, like, yeah, when you order a bundled product, the warehouse get a sort of, they don't need to know how much was spent. They just need to know it's these 6 or 7 items, put them all out in a single bundle, which is much easier these days.
Our business has started with that as like the baseline behavior. So everyone that has worked with us and started with us knows that like pretty much 99.9% of the stuff we sell is already bundled and is like that from the start. So, you know, all my guys, everyone knows that like most orders are going to have at least 4 parts to them, you know, all 4 corners of a vehicle. So if you see an order with like, why is it only 3 parts? Why is it only 1 part? Something's wrong here, you know, and then you go down the rabbit hole of fixing stuff. So, you know, it's been an inherent nature for us to start with bundling in mind. And so, yeah.
I guess as well, if somebody orders less than 4, there's every reason why customer service might phone them up or send them an email and say, are you sure you just want 1? Because you've got 4 wheels. This isn't a pack of 4, it's a pack of 1. Or you've ordered 3 parts, but it's only going to support 1 wheel. So like, are you just replacing a kit you already bought of this? Or, which is, I guess, is a really good value add of building that. And also, and bringing it on nicely, is the thing I really want to talk about next as well is customers. It's building that relationship with customers and trying to understand who they are. So this might be like a 2-hour question. We'll trim it as much as we can, but what's your sort of, I want to use the word like evolution. What's your evolution of kind of customer knowledge, customer experience, customer relationship? What's that evolution look like from where you said you started, where it's like, something's broken, I just need a spare part. How has that developed to where you guys are today?
Yeah. But back when I started in 08, 09, we were selling highly modified, like very custom suspension. Guys lowering their vehicles, guys lifting their vehicles. And so just from that very, very moment, it was, I was knowing that nothing, I was still learning myself. And even me learning myself, selling the product, I was also still kind of, I don't want to say confused, but I knew I didn't know a lot. And so as before I even got started with Shock Surplus, I recognized the customers asking like, You know, they don't even know what they want. They know what they see something out on the street and they're like, I want that, but they don't know how to get there.
And so there's
so much of that happening now, even nowadays, where people just want the aesthetics of a modified vehicle. They don't really care what the performance looks like. And then there's the other end of the spectrum of like, people want pure performance and don't care about the aesthetics. They want like, they want the minutia of the product and the details is what's important to them. So we kind of address that range of buyer. Plus we also address the range of, you know, the guy that just went into their automotive repair shop and, hey, this quote was way too much. Let me go on the internet and see if I can find it for cheaper. And so we address such a huge range of buyer, but we don't top out at the professional racers. We don't really touch that level because we don't really have much value to provide them. Those guys just know more than me. And I'm okay to give up that range of knowledge. And so discovering all this, you know, more and more products enter the market. And so the way I train my people and the way we start out is like just actually truly understanding, I want to say hydrodynamics, which is what shock absorbers really are, but we understand kind of the base behaviors of the different brands and how that, and that starts to just kind of play out across many different vehicles. So we sell for, you know, thousands of vehicles, so many applications, 25 or 30 different brands. But once you have a, it's like math. Once you have the base behaviors of formulas and whatever, you just understand how a certain thing is going to apply to a certain vehicle. And so that's kind of how I really establish the baseline of my knowledge, and also train my people to understand the baseline of these products and their behaviors. And so with that in mind, we were able to really start helping out a lot of people through all of our blog posts, our YouTube videos. Yeah, just ingrained myself in the community because I was the community. I have a truck that I was just using for camping and mountain biking and all the adventuring and all that stuff. So I was my own customer. And so that allowed me to start talking to similar people like me, you know, a lot through blog posts, a lot through product descriptions. Back to the bundling thing, I mean, people are used to searching a part number that they think they need for their vehicle. You know, our listing would come up and we'd have a description that was all handwritten by myself or our team that, you know, didn't match a manufacturer description or anyone else's description anywhere else. And so immediately we stand out like, oh, these guys are speaking from experience. And hey, what do you know? Google is now in 2023, finally, 2023, 2024, finally rewarding experiential content.
You're welcome. Yeah,
exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Because, you know, they're seeing how easy it is to just copy everything and scale up manufacturer copy across infinite websites. Right. And so affiliate marketers, they do the same thing now. They're just like copying someone else's copy or the manufacturer's copy and applying it to their affiliate links. But that's not being rewarded anymore. Now it's experience. So that's, I think, you know, we've been well positioned to kind of reap those benefits, I think.
And I think, I mean, just touching on that point quickly about Google, I did a conference talk recently where I was saying that it was actually called like the 8 myths of SEO. And one of them was completed it, which I thought was hilarious.
Laughs. One was what?
Completed it. I've finished my SEO. I've done it. I'm already number one.
Oh, that's fine.
Yeah, all right. Yeah, but one of them exactly was the when an algorithm update hits you and it hurts. And sometimes it's like, okay, it's a technology change and we need to change something for the tech. And we just need to accept like Google's changed something. There's nothing we can do about that, but we can change the tech and we change the tech. However, sometimes you get the updates, which are just like that, where I remember many, many years ago when like, I think it was Panda that hit. Google, I've put these funny names on them. Panda hit and basically said, if you had loads of bad links coming into your site, we're going to mark you down. And all the SEO guys in the world were freaking out. And one of my claims to fame was publicly on the record saying, I'm really excited for this.
Yeah.
Like at an SEO conference. And everyone was gasping because I, exactly as you've just described, I was sitting there going, all of my clients, we've not built any bad links. We've only built links where there's like, there's a blogger who's really influential back when like Blogspot and Tumblr were things that people used. We had some bloggers on those, for example, talking about our clients' products and linking to them and reviewing them and adding value that wasn't on the website about those products. And Google went, oh, that's fantastic. And pretty much everyone, we picked up loads of work where we were basically just, as soon as Google launched the disavow report, where you could say these links mean nothing, we just completely cleaned up with new clients. That was our COVID. That was our big boom as an agency. Nice. Many years ago. We've had several kind of smaller booms since off the back of us doing stuff ourselves. But I think you're absolutely spot on with that manufacturer content. And I think putting myself in the shoes of a lot of people listening who are maybe at the earlier stages, it's really painful because you're like, oh, there's a million things I need to do. Do I really want to spend my time writing these descriptions? When let's face it, absolutely, a lot of customers come in and just go, correct part, add to basket. I think what you need to do is use something like Hotjar or Yandex and actually watch people use the site and go, how much they scroll down and expand that description box and actually go, well, do you know what? Everybody expands the description box. It's the most important thing on the page, or one of the most important things on the page. So it is worth your time doing it. And I think as well, if you're serious about scaling, and I think we'll come on to that in a bit as well, talking about your journey specifically and how you've gone from, you know, kind of working with your stepdad to actually building what you've got today and eight figures. How do you get there? Well, one of the things I think you need to do with things like copy and, you know, speaking to your audience is the more you do today, the less you'll need to do tomorrow. It's just part of the DNA. It's part of the process. It's every time we add a product, we do all of this to it. I have one really big question for you though, Sean. You've explained things you do for your customers and who they are. My big question is how do you know who they are? Like, what was that exercise like, or those exercises? Like, how do you communicate with them? How do you learn about them? How do you find out? Do you study what they do? Do you study what they order? Do you talk to them? Do you meet up with them? Like, what does that whole bit look like? Because there's a really kind of loaded reason I'm asking. And it's one of the biggest things we get asked about in the podcast from you guys who are tuning in is like, I don't feel like I fully know who my customers are. I think I do. And that's the most dangerous place to be, is I think I know. So how did you guys do it?
I was my customer, or still am, but you know, guys with trucks, throwing mountain bikes in the back, throwing gear in the back. A lot of pickup trucks has been our core customer for so long because they're the guys doing all the activities. You know, we're using our vehicles as a tool to go do something. Now, granted, there's also a big community who use their vehicles as like the thing. But for me, the vehicle is just a tool to go do the thing. Mountain climbing, rock climbing, mountain biking, skiing, snowboarding, all these different sports, surfing. So those customers are the ones that are doing a little bit more with their vehicle, where, you know, factory parts just are oftentimes inadequate. And so early on, there weren't a lot of alternatives for them. And so factory replacement, some minor performance upgrades were kind of our bread and butter. But as we really hit 2014, 2015, and, you know, the term overlanding started becoming big in the United States. Social media started kind of really highlighting a lot of the adventure stuff. But highlighting adventure, it's definitely making people to go out further away from their metropolitan centers. So us and the market in general just reap the benefit of that as people want to upgrade their equipment. They want to go faster or do more. And so I kind of just identified those customers because me and my friends are the customers. And so it's easy to be like, this solves this problem, this solves that problem. You know, sometimes we would do both. We would be participating in both issues. But as you do more and more of that, you know, there's different levels to the game, right? People want to be extreme, or people want to be entry level, and all sections of things. And so being the customer, you know, there's been a lot of talk now. How do you start a business? People say, what's your passion? Okay. How do you educate in your passion? Is there a product there for you to create or serve? And so I feel like I just naturally fell into that thing. And so is really just addressing my own community with their problems, and, you know, starting from just product knowledge as a baseline.
Nice. And I just love, this is one of my favorite things in marketing, and one of the reasons I've done this for like 15, 16 years now, is I love how you've gone from shock absorbers, like literally, what was the name you gave them earlier? Hydro, what's the full title?
Like hydrodynamics.
Hydrodynamics. Yeah,
like
there we go.
That's like the science. That's like the science of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you've literally gone from that, which, like, let's face it, no one enjoys shock absorbers. It just as a concept. I mean, it improves the rides. It means you can put more in what, you know, in the vehicle, and they kind of look cool. But no one, like, no one gets out of bed and is like, shock absorbers. Yes. But you've coupled that with all this outdoor, the whole outdoor life, and the whole realm of things, which it just brings marketing to life. And I think the old saying is, like, you know, features tell, benefits sell. And just everything you've listed then is you've kind of, you just keep jumping between the two, going like, you need this part to enjoy this more. And like, how amazing is this? And you need this part. And it just links together really nicely. And I think one of my biggest bugbearers, and there's a few of my clients at the moment, we're having this conversation. So if you're listening, listen to Sean. Sean knows what he's doing. And this is where we want to get you guys to. They're sitting there going, it's just, you know, it's just furniture, or it's just whatever. It's just a product. That's all it is. And it's like, not to your customers, it's not. To your customers, it's so much more than that. It's an enablement to do the thing they want to do. And so, yeah, absolutely love that. And you're absolutely right with social media and the growth of Instagram and now TikTok. And also, if you look at the way people like consume stuff on television now, it's YouTube and it's Netflix and it's Disney. It's not like it used to be, which was like, I don't know how many channels. I mean, you guys had cable, I think, earlier than us, as you guys call it. And we had five channels. I remember when the fourth channel and the fifth channel came out in the UK, and we were like, what is this? It's too much choice. you can watch whatever you want in the whole archive of history for less than like, what, $4? You can basically watch anything you want.
Pretty much.
And you can rent stuff, borrow stuff. Like, no one has a DVD player anymore. But the fact that people are consuming so much content, and even the other night, my wife said to me, what do you want to do tonight? And I was like, I want to learn more about Greenland. And she was like, what? And I was like, I just want to. So I went on YouTube and I just searched facts about Greenland and just sat in front of my telly watching them. And then, and she asked me, what did you learn? And I was like, fascinating. But even throughout that, some of the ads I was being served, there were some obvious ones like tourism, you know, go to Iceland, go to Greenland, go to Finland, all these similar countries. But there were also products. There was like a really cool backpack that, you know, I was like, that's a cool backpack. And I was like, I mean, I'm going to put a laptop in it and then put the backpack in my car and drive to the office and back every day. That's what my backpack's really for.
Yeah.
But here's me thinking about, you know, exploring the mountains, which I do also love doing in my spare time. So yeah, I love the fact that you guys have kind of coupled all of that together. And okay, so we got to 2015 when you said kind of all of that started to boom and you could play much more on that. But 2019 is when you really started to scale. So I think the biggest question, if I ask the audience right now, and obviously it's pre-recorded, so there is no audience yet. But if I ask the audience right now, I'm sure the biggest thing they're going to say is like, all right, Sean, I've got a business that's doing, I don't know, a few thousand a month, I'm doing, you know, a few hundred thousand a month. How do I break through that? How do I get out of my day job and run my Shopify store properly and do it as a full-time business? How do I get to eight figures? Like, what are some of the key bits you've been through to make it?
Yeah, the first real breakthrough was understanding. I was doing Google AdWords. I started that like in 2015 on my BigCommerce site. And I really effed up because I didn't do the math early enough. We were crushing it on Google AdWords in the early days. And so I thought we were doing okay. I decided to let's do a customized web store to build out my vision. That after spending about $100,000 trying to get a custom solution built, it failed and we pulled the plug after 16, 18 months. That was a really hard learning. And that was right when Shopify really kind of came on the market, and me and my partner, web developer Brandon, we were just like, F this, pulling the plug. We literally went home that day and started building on Shopify. We didn't go back to BigCommerce, went to Shopify. And that was 2018. And as soon as that, we had that up and running in 2 months, started delivering Google AdWords to, you know, paid traffic to the site, started getting really good sales. We were like, you know, 20 ROAS out the gate, 20, 25 ROAS out the gate, because back to customer searching one part number, they were arriving at a set that was now, you know, 4, 5, or 6 times the cart size of that one part number. So if it was $60, our bundle would be $240. And so the way AdWords works on that, it's like you're bidding on this little small item, but you're actually getting this really big item for a sale. And so we connected those dots. I think we did like $500,000 the first year on Shopify. And this was already my full-time job at this point. I kind of burnt all bridges when I started Shock Surplus, because I only had a dropship, you know, $30,000 a month, $50,000 a month to like pay for my own self. And it was a lifestyle business to start. And so it was always cash flow positive as a dropship business. when I started hiring customer service agents in 15, 16, 17 is when I started really connecting the dots of like how much we could really grow, matching the team up to that, the data and all that stuff. But AdWords is really where we started. We were doing Facebook as well, and that was really good for us out the gate, but we've just stayed super focused on a single customer. And the, you know, we benefit because the automotive industry is so massive. There's like the entire, it's like a $60 billion aftermarket industry for us, let alone like factory replacement stuff. So we naturally already had a huge audience of buyers to tap into, all bottom of funnel people. So many people that are like, they know they need something because their stuff broke. And so we're getting those people into aftermarket options. And how do you reach them? And Google was just the thing. It still is a thing to do. The massive bottom of funnel is still available there to reach, obviously more expensive nowadays, but focusing on that single customer, we got to our first million within 2 years on Shopify, bidding on bottom of funnel stuff. But we got our first million with like 60 or 70% organic traffic accounting for the sales, and then 30% was paid. And so that was basically because our bundles had been creating authority in the space for many years. And so we benefited from that being kind of first out the gate. And then to eight figures, that kind of just happened really suddenly because of COVID. COVID really just propelled us from doing, I think 2019, we did mid seven figures on Shopify. And then in 2020, it was just like, I think we quadrupled that year into the stratosphere.
Nice. I mean, what a journey to go on. And I love your honesty as well. I think it'd be easy enough for you to say like, yeah, you know, we came up with some genius formula and scaled it and it was every little detail and stuff. But I think we need to be real when something like COVID hits. And I heard someone recently in another podcast I was listening to, and I can't remember what podcast it was. Anyone who's been listening for a while, vouch, I have the worst memory in the world. And I should write these sources down. It's probably my New Year's resolution. But they were saying that they hate hearing that brands like you guys, COVID hit and it was just a miracle or whatever.
Sorry.
But I don't think you need to apologize. I think quite the opposite. I think you're in the right place, the right time. And that is so important for most businesses. Like, I mean, you must've heard the story about Gorilla Glass and the iPhone. And it was like someone developed this really strong glass to which everyone just sat in a drawer because everyone was like, when are you ever going to need glass that strong? Like if you need something stronger, just don't make it out of glass. Like it's quite simple. Make it out of concrete or, you know, metal or something, or make it hollow because of the properties of, you know, a hollow material can hold more weight. So there's all of this. And then suddenly someone knocked on the door and was like, we need a phone that can go in everyone's pocket and won't break every time you drop it. Only most times with the earlier iPhones, I got through quite a few myself. There's always that moment when you drop it and you could just see the back of it and you're like, no. And then you pick it up and you're like, yeah, it's happened. Thank the Lord for insurance. We have insurance now. But I think it's that kind of right place, right time. Someone invented that. And the guy who invented it, I think, had passed away when it actually became mass market. And pretty much all of us have it in our pockets right now. You know, we're sitting on our desks. And so I think right place, right time is amazing. And I love your humility actually just to go, do you know what? We were already doing amazing and we'd set everything up. We just needed a boom of like all the shops are shut. And I guess bringing it on to what we're talking about this month as well then with email. So you've been on that journey. How much does email play a part in all of that? Like, I guess you're almost waiting for their parts to break again before they need another one. What do you guys do with your email strategy, like between orders and to try and keep growing things?
Yeah, before I get into email, back to the right place, right time and COVID and just being a retail in general, like having to, you know, Amazon has trained all of us to be like knowing, you know, it's in stock and I'm going to get it at this point. You know, I built our system to deliver that experience as well, as far as being in stock. And, you know, when COVID happened, everyone was looking for stuff that was in stock. And so we also benefited from that being ahead of the curve there of inventory clarity and delivery expectations. And so that was another thing too, of just like, we can't forget the basics of what consumers want now. They want all as much reduction of shipping anxiety as possible. They want to know that you actually have it. And so I don't know, that's sometimes that's lost on people. And I just always want to kind of highlight like the core product is your service, right? We don't make a product at all. And so our product is really knowledge and service. And so you have to how do you deliver that in spades versus all your unlimited competition? Like today we'll have a new competitor that's going to come out the gate with our baseline of a behavior and then trying to beat us and take our sales. And so how do you keep iterating and whatnot? So we did benefit from, right place, right time, but we're also following the customer has Amazon in mind as the retail standard. And so we're also trying to play catch up there as well. And so
yeah, so really
just want to keep that. Just want to keep that in mind as far as right place, right time. But you also got luck is preparation meets timing, right? And a lot of prep. And sometimes Alex Tremosi says you can be working your butt off for, 2, 3, 4 years. And maybe in the fifth year is when you break through. Working hard, sometimes you have no idea when you will get the reward. And so you just have to keep working, right? So that's what we're kind of found ourselves in.
Yeah, yeah. To add on that as well, I think that the luck thing as well, my wife, if you're listening to this, honey, I love you, but you always say to me oh, well, that was lucky. She'll say to me okay, that new client you've got, where did they come from? And it's the same in e-commerce, where people are shopping around online. Where do they come from? How do they find you? And you're it's not like you open up the Google Ads channel. I know you guys hit it in a real sweet spot, and I was working on Google Ads right through that sweet spot. But the thing is, if you're not in the game, you're definitely not going to get that customer. So when she asked me where does a client come from? I'll say, I went to school with someone who then disappeared for 10 years. I didn't see them. And then I bumped into, this is a true story, but I bumped into them in the changing room at my local gym and said, sorry, are you Sam? And it was my old friend Sam from school. There was a rumor that I broke his leg at school. So I also mentioned that. I said, Sam, I literally haven't seen you since school. Is your leg okay now? You did break it. It wasn't my fault. He laughed and was like, I was just trying to pin it on you because all the girls were loving it. And I liked one of them. But anyway, we were 14, 15 at the time. So I bump into him. I said, what are you doing with your life? And he said, well, I'm playing a lot of football. I was you should join my football team. So he started playing football with us a bit. Where are you working at? A web agency. And I was like, oh yeah. They pass lots of clients on to us. Anyway, he phoned me out the blue one day and just said, I've got this lady called Emma. She's based in the US. I barely know her, but she's reached out to me of all people and said, do I know an SEO agency? You're the guys. Can you talk to her? So of course we got in touch with Emma and had a quick chat with Emma. And Emma said, look, I'm redesigning this site. Could you work on it? And I said, yeah, I can get my team to look at it. Whatever. I've got a whole team here. Turned out the client is 20 minutes from our office. So you think, I've gone from Sam, from 10 years of not seeing Sam, to Emma, who's based in the US, to then this then happened. And we've been working with that client for 4 years now. They've got 6, 7 websites with us, a big old firm nearby, and they work across the railway network across the entire UK. So no one's ever heard of them, but they work on these massive projects. And we work with them at everything from equipment hire to how they land more projects, to information guys, to designing a new, motorway junction or highway, as you guys call it, a new freeway junction. They do all sorts, and we work with these guys. And I think, just to go back to your point, it's so random, but you've got to be in it to win it. If you're not there, you're definitely not going to get the client.
It came down to you sticking to your schedule and going to the freaking gym.
Exactly. So going to the gym is good. But I always say as well, if your business, like your business and my business, we both rely on, if you imagine a dice, we rely on how many sixes we can roll. So the more times you roll the dice, statistically, the more sixes we're going to get. So the more you spend on advertising with a good, strong message, more customers you're going to get in, the more your business is going to grow. So then when COVID hit, I hear what you're saying about it's right place, right time, market fit, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, if you hadn't done all the things you'd done, then in that fifth year you described of you didn't know, that hypothetical, someone made it in the fifth year, you don't know. If you've not been doing it for the 5 years, you're definitely not going to succeed. And I think that's where we all just need to be really humble and keep looking in the mirror and going, what am I doing right at the moment? What am I doing wrong at the moment? What's not working for customers? So we'll talk about email now as well, but if your email game's not working, stop sending emails or just keep changing it until it works. Just because you sent one email and it didn't work, that just means congratulations, you've started the journey. Doesn't mean it's not going to work and doesn't mean it's failed. But yeah, I'd love to hear about your email journey. And because email really is luck, isn't it? It's you just keep chucking stuff out and see what comes back.
It kind of is. We've been with Klaviyo for a few years now. And the first year out, recognizing what flows were, I immediately just clicked. I was oh, I know exactly how to use this. And so, we just started delivering a welcome flow based on a a discount sign up, you know, our AOV is just really big. It's like $600. And so I knew, or back then it was like $500. But back then I knew that, like, you know, certain amount of margin on a $500 AOV, I can give away XYZ as an acquisition cost. And so usually that's like 20 or 30 or $50. And so, you know, $10, $10, $15 for an email sign up was just like a sweet spot for a lot of our audience. And so we were doing that, and we have a lot of just blog content in general. We have YouTube videos that we started doing in 2019. And so we have a lot of organic content. And so my idea was like, I'm going to deliver all the education I can in an email drip system. So basically 5 different emails, 2 educational articles each, plus maybe a YouTube video sprinkled here and there, maybe a discount code. We never really discounted up at the beginning at all, because I was at the perspective like, none of my competitors are doing what we're doing. And so people can price shop, and maybe we aren't the cheapest despite our name. I'm going to get the customer that appreciates our service, appreciates our education, and is going to buy with us based on that. I don't want the price shopper, because their return rate is like 2 or 3 times.
Yeah. They got no loyalty.
Exactly. Yeah. And so when I started seeing that those emails started, you know, producing pretty well, it was just one real flow. I was just kind of proving it out. And then from there on, I went to go hire an agency called Flowium. And I was like, I've already built this flow, but I need this flow done for this segment, this segment, this segment, this segment. And then we need exit intents for this brand, this brand, this brand. And so I hired an agency that really built it out for us after year one. And then year two, we did about 15% of our revenue through email. And then last year was year three of email. And we did, I think we topped out at about 32% in around Black Friday. But I want to get your feedback on this. We just recently changed our Klaviyo attribution model from 5-day view through to last click. And naturally it tanked all of the numbers, but I'm trying to get a lot tighter on attribution and how much, you know, different efforts are really contributing to converting that customer. Have you guys seen much on, or have you?
Yeah.
Do you understand?
It's an absolute rabbit hole.
Yeah, I know most people are just stick with the standard attribution in Klaviyo, which is the view through, the 5-day view through, and that naturally gives massive amount of revenue because, you know, we know our buyer behavior. But the last click we've changed to try to get tighter. But our email agency is like, they don't have any other clients doing this, and naturally our numbers look terrible now. But
well, of course they don't. If the numbers are terrible,
yeah.
But, it's bigger than email, obviously, because if you switch it to last click, all you've learned from doing that with your statistics, it doesn't always go that way. Probably 80, 90% of the time it goes that it drops if it's on last click. It just means customers aren't using email as the last port of contact. Email is the thing that nudged them. And they went, oh, I should buy from these guys. And annoyingly, and this is the worst thing in any report, and it's true, so you can't argue with it, but it's annoying, is in GA4 or Shopify, it just says like, all your sales direct. And you're like, all right, I'll turn off all my marketing I've ever done then. There's no point having any of it because direct's done all of it. And then what happens? Direct dies. And direct, for anyone who's listening to this, is like, what the heck's that? Direct is where someone types in like yourwebsite.com, comes straight in. Nothing's sent them there, which is why it doesn't come under any other channels.
I have one thing to add is the going from 7 figures to 8 figures, or even 6 figures to 7 figures is, you know, back when we were doing it in 2015, 16, it can't be applied nowadays because the whole attribution situation is such a black box. So we've been using kind of a blended ROAS, and because our buying cycle for our $1,000 products, $2,000 products,
not going to be one day, is it?
Yeah, yeah. Sometimes it's 3 months, 6 months, a year. And so, you know, looking at your advertising spend, all of it over, you know, depending on how big your item is, you know, extended out to 2 months, extended out to 3 months or 6 months to understand your, I look at it as a average cost per sale. You're advertising.
It's scary,
isn't
it? You do something today and it's going to be like 9 months before we've fully understood like the full impact of what it's going to do. Yeah. We have a client in your space we work with, and the frustrating thing is, luckily their window is no more than about a month, but we finished January and we're like, oh my gosh, they're bankrupt. We have that response on the first of every month. And what Google Ads does, which is nice, is if you get a sale, like say I got a sale today, it's the middle of February right now, got a sale today, but they first clicked in January and today's journey on the site was like 2 minutes to basically put their card information in and click pay. Whereas the journey back in January was like 20 minutes. They added loads to the basket. They signed up to the newsletter. They went on customer service and asked a question on live chat. Like Google Ads is watching all of that. So it actually attributes most of the revenue back to January. So that client's revenue has doubled since January's finished in the first sort of two and a half weeks since January's finished, which of course at first the client was like, and we're using data-driven attribution on that client. And of course the client's then sitting there going like, what the heck? Like, is this time travel? Like, are people going back to January purchasing now? No, no, it's attributing it to when the journey started, because PPC is quite often not the thing they use for last click. It's direct or it's they've got that email that says, here's your 10% off your first order. They've gone and clicked on the email. So it looks like email is your best channel. But then when you look at the email data, you're like, most people converting on email are doing their first purchase. You have a lifetime value problem. But if you just look at the channels and go, email's doing everything, you think email is driving massive lifetime value, but it's not. I flagged it a few weeks ago. There's the best report I would suggest anyone looks at that wants to only pay for new customers once and then do lifetime value and email and subscriptions or whatever thereafter is. And the customer cohort analysis within Shopify is fantastic. You've seen it. So it gives you the months. 100% of people did their first order because you're just looking at orders. And then it gives you a percentage month by month, kind of working off each month. So you can go, people that bought in March, it was 4 months later, we still had like 6% of them purchasing. And you kind of take a screenshot of it and go, right, we've got a whole year ahead of us. How do we make these numbers as big as possible? Lots of email, lots of social, lots of retargeting campaigns. Let's get them back in because they already know who we are. And the longer it is between orders, the colder they're getting. So we need to kind of get them back quickly and see what we can improve a bit.
The win back and the post-purchase flows have been a big focus for me the past year. We've lifted our repeat customer rate from like 6% to 13%.
Wow, that's really over double.
It's really hard for us because, you know, someone buying a set of shocks, they're not going to buy it again for 3-4 years usually. And so you'll be lucky to get that purchase way down the line. And so we've started expanding our catalog and adding on more auxiliary items, accessory items to like, you know, bring them back, within a week or 2 weeks, or like you said, bring them back as soon as possible while they're still, you know, in love with your brand, still know your brand. So the win back, the post-purchase, those kind of things that to incentivize getting those customers back. There was a statistic where it's like, they need to buy from three times. And you have like, if after they buy from you three times, like the LTV just significantly goes up. I'm failing on the actual source numbers, but LTV is the new hot term in the past year. I've been trying to focus on it for a while now because we have to be profitable on that first sale. And then everything else after that is even more, you know, beneficial. There's a lot of businesses out there that are like, we'll break even on first sale and hopefully we win back over the lifetime.
We'll make a loss ourselves. A lot of subscription businesses is like month four, they aim to make profit. And I know I'm the guy that's convinced some of them to do it when I've looked at the numbers and said, most people stay with you for well over a year on a subscription. You know, it's like 98% of them are still here a year later. Especially we work a little bit in the insurance space, which is not so much e-commerce, it's more lead gen. But certainly in that, we sort of say, you know, what's the average lifetime value of a customer? And they say, well, probably about 5+ years, or in 5 years, we've still got 98% of those people that have taken out a car policy or something with us, which is fantastic. So then it's like, well, let's factor that into our ROI. We can now, going back to you were saying about being competitive and new competitors coming in, we can outrun them. We can outbid them on Google Ads because we can say, actually, we're going to pay twice as much to get each new customer in. We're going to actively do that, which sounds like a bad business decision. But in the long run, we're playing a 20-year game here, really profitable. So going back to a question about the attribution bit is, I think the biggest conversation I'm having with clients, certainly over the last kind of 1 to 2 years, is I keep saying to them that if customers are going to click on an email, click on social, ask customer service a question, click on some Google Shopping ads, searching for your brand, and then come in direct and purchase, we just need to accept that's what's going to happen, which I know is not the nicest answer to give you or any client. But we've got to be realistic about that. And I think one thing that some of our larger clients do these days is they look at the ROI of each channel and we keep a daily eye on that and kind of go like, what are they all doing? But what they do is they make big shifts in budget So say they've got like 5 advertising channels. They go, all right, this month, we're going to lower all 4 of them by 10% or 20%. And then we're going to double one of them. We're going to double like Facebook, for example. So we'll lower all of these 4, and we'll double Facebook. And we'll do that for, you know, if the cycle's a week, we can do it for a month and get a good conclusive result out of that. If the cycle's 3 months, we probably need to do it for 3 to 6 months. I'm going to say the cycle between sort of, I've clicked on my first ad and I've made my first purchase. So you start juggling stuff like that. But again, I think the longer you're in business and the more that you're learning about customers, the more that you're working with customers. I mean, you guys have been doing this for decades now. You know, when you look back, you've got to play the long game now, which is actually we're moving a big ship. So we're going to make a drastic change overnight, but we're going to leave it for like 3 or 4 months to see what happens. But there's always that risk of like, can I keep some sort of eye on stuff in life? Because actually, if we're monitoring it in real time, I want to move the budget back. If I can see early on, it's been a failure. I mean, we've got one client who they're a lead gen client. They generate leads for like £20 each on Facebook, £250 each on Google. Google makes them way more money, which on the face value doesn't sound like it does, but the leads from Google, like you were saying earlier,
are way more. Yep.
Bottom of funnel. Like, and it's, do you want to start a business? They're a franchise. So like, do you want to open your own franchise with us? And Google is like, I'm trying to start a franchise in your space. Of course I want to talk to you. Facebook, it's just like, yeah, I want to be my own boss. Click platform. Yeah. So the Facebook leads, they try and qualify them very quickly. We actually have 2 completely separate flows in the CRM where the Facebook one's pretty automatic. It sends you like 4 or 5 emails before you talk to a human, but you don't know that. It's all kind of AI and personalized stuff. But the Google one, as soon as one of them comes in, straight on the phone, like within a minute, we phone you up and it's like, yeah, hey, come to one of our discovery days. We run them every 2 weeks. Which one do you want to come to? You know, it's free lunch and we'll do one near where you're based. And we'll come to you because they know they're going to be really keen. Whereas Facebook, they've got to qualify them first. So it is a challenge. Like I've seen Meta Ads and Klaviyo and other email platforms like Omnisend, Saguno, all these guys, I've seen all of them report more revenue than Shopify is telling me at times. And you're like, okay, I get it. Like you might have been involved in all of that revenue, but it's not happened in that same month time frame you're telling me. The problem with last click, yeah, is you're now only going like, okay, they clicked on SEO last click or PPC or email or something. So the whole journey before that, I need to keep all those channels on to have got this order, but I also need to be profitable in this. But I also need to see true ROAS from Klaviyo. I think there's some really good tools out there. Like we've been playing a lot, and I'll shout them out, at Triple Whale. They've got a free dashboard for Shopify. We're trying to get them on the show at the moment. So watch this space, everyone. But
we were using Triple Whale for a good 6 months. And I really like their dashboard as well. It's just like every day I can see like what ad, sometimes we would have Facebook ads just like kind of going viral. I'd be like, oh, what the heck? We have 40 shares on this ad. Like
yeah, that's why. That's, you
know, exactly. And so I dig into that. I really like Triple Whale's dashboard. And we tried to, after them, we tried to go to Segment Stream, and that didn't prove to be very beneficial for us at all. And we stopped with them. And so right now we're in a holding period deciding where to go next. But I always think back, like I missed the Triple Whale.
It's not cheap though. That's the thing. The more you grow, the more they start charging.
Yeah. It was like $2,500 a month for us. And looking back, it's worth it for me when, you know, we're running 6 figures of advertising. But I think we're looking at Prescient AI next, because back to the customer journey, we get it. We have so much organic email overlay, Facebook comments, all sorts of, we play in almost all spaces, including TikTok now. And so understanding weight, like it doesn't come down to, it's not like there's no one thing getting all the attribution anymore. It's probably been that way for a while, but there are places where it's weighed more, right? And that's where as a owner, I'm like, well, if I know my Facebook video traffic is the biggest priority for starting the journey, then of course I'm going to pour in way more there. Or is it Google middle?
But you've got to have more later down the funnel as well. If you're going to put more in Facebook, you've got to be prepared to put more in Google, which then means businesses then go, well, let's just increase all of them by 5%. And then you look at it at the end of the month and go, it's not made much difference. It's only a 5% lift and we've got 6% more revenue, but I'm now asking the same question, like, how do I attribute that back? It's like, yeah, it's difficult. But I mean, customers are so savvy these days. And everywhere you go online, you know, TikTok, Meta, et cetera, they're all screaming at you with all these tools as shoppers to say, use this, you get cash back. Use this, you get discounts. Only buy from these retailers. And then it's like, what do I do with that? And I think I think going back to something you said earlier on, my catchphrase, and I've started putting together notes for a book on this at the request of two of you that emailed me recently, is marketing has been lost from digital marketing. You can trump all of this, great product, right market fit, solving a real problem to the right audience, and you've already nailed it. And these channels now, which is the same as what you've done, you've really caught on to the outdoor world and gone, these guys have got trucks, they need these parts, but we can provide a much better service than everybody else because service and knowledge are your two things. And I think that's really powerful. Anyway, we better draw things into land. I think it's been amazing having you on, Sean. The most important question I always love asking this right at the end then is, someone's listening to this going, Sean, you keep saying the name of the business, I can't write it down quickly enough. If people want to check out your business or reach out to you, follow you, find out what's going on, how can they get in touch? Like, what are the easiest ways to do that?
Yeah, Shock Surplus on Instagram and YouTube, Shock Boss on TikTok. And I just want to end with just the customer education aspect of Instagram, you know, a lot of brands out there were not, Instagram just wasn't their jam. They didn't produce good pictures or they couldn't tell a good story. TikTok is the complete opposite. Whereas for us, education, just talking to the camera and educating, that is like inherent to the TikTok kind of audience. And so we've gained a lot of traction there. And then what happened? Instagram copied TikTok. And so now our education is working really well on Instagram where it didn't work at all. And so that's another thing of just like experiment, because all these platforms are trying to kind of copy the best parts of each other. So anyways, Shock Boss on TikTok and YouTube, we're really active there as well as far as customer education. If you guys want to check out what works for us and maybe apply it yourself.
We're probably going to do a whole episode on TikTok soon because my agency is officially a TikTok agency now, which as of about 2 days ago, we launched our first campaign on it. And within 24 hours, we were like, wow, some really interesting results, which we might share those if our client lets us or do something completely independent. But yeah, as you say, TikTok and Instagram are kind of going like this together. Like TikTok's trying to be a bit more professional. Instagram's trying to be a bit more TikTok in terms of the way it produces content or shows content. I think it's realized most of us just love scrolling through video after video and don't care what kind of video it's like, just serve me stuff is where they're both going, which is fascinating. So yeah, as a brand, opportunity to make a lot of noise on those. Well, look, Sean, thank you so much. Been an absolute pleasure having you on today. Really appreciate it, Simon. Thanks for everybody else for tuning in. But Sean, yeah, thank you so much. Been great having you along.
Thanks, Nick. Been a pleasure.
Great stuff. And for everybody listening, apologies, we're not posting on Fridays at the moment. It's not deliberate. It's just that we're trying to pin down guests. Unlike Sean, a couple of guests haven't turned up. Sean's been fantastic. But please keep subscribed, stay tuned. And we've got some amazing stuff coming up in the next few weeks as well. And also, if you want to be a guest, you want to sponsor whatever, winningwithshopify.com, fill out any of the forms on there. They both come through to Byron and myself. Thank you for tuning in. We hope to see you again next week.
Thanks for listening to today's podcast. You can subscribe to our weekly newsletter for exclusive offers at winningwithshopify.com. And don't forget to check out our Facebook group by searching for Winning with Shopify on Facebook. Over and out.